SBS Radio.
I am on the line with Ivan Karadzic, a specialist cave diver who said that there were only around about 20 of them at the heart of the rescue operation to save Mupa Academy soccer team. This is the first time Ivan is speaking to an Australian media about his experience. Ivan is currently in Koh Tao Island in Surat Thani, Thailand. Hi Ivan, my name is Thanu Attacharusit. Thank you so much for your time and welcome to SBS Australia.
Thank you very much. I have to be totally honest, I'm a bit ignorant when it comes to news.
No worries.
I don't believe I've spoken to any Australian outlets at all.
First of all, huge congratulations on the successful yet seemingly impossible rescue. I believe the entire Australia was holding our collective breath while you were doing it.
So were we, almost, yes, but it's, thank you very much, you know, it's, bit of an impossible mission, but apparently was not that impossible, so yeah, it's...
Can you first tell us a bit about yourself, please, your background, and I believe you did move to Thailand?
That is correct. I'm originally from Denmark, up on the northern hemisphere of the globe, opposite you guys, and I have lived in Thailand and worked as a scuba diving instructor for the past 11 years.
And why did you choose to live in Koh Tao, which is an island down south in Thailand?
That is correct. We are located in the south of Thailand, in the Gulf of Thailand, actually. To be honest, I don't think I actually chose to do that. I came here as a tourist in 2006 and fell in love with everything that is Koh Tao. And then I went back to Denmark, sold my apartment and my other goods, quit my job, and went down here again, and I never looked back. I believe it's the story of many experts on Koh Tao.
Right, I guess that's something we can perhaps next time explore further as well.
For sure.
And when did you start diving, and how would you describe your diving skill sets?
So I did some diving back in Denmark, but I never got a sanctioned certification. So I dived a little bit, but very little. I actually did my open water course, which is the typical course that you start your diving career with. I did that here on Koh Tao in 2006.
And how much actual cave diving have you done prior to this?
I have been a cave diver since 2016, I believe. So I'm fairly new in cave diving, but I am also a technical diving instructor trainer. So I'm definitely not new to this sort of diving, but the specific sub hobby, if you want to call it that, cave diving, I'm fairly new. So I have about two years' experience of cave diving. I luckily live in a place where cave diving is easy accessible, so I've done quite a few cave dives since I completed my dive course and so.
And then how did you get involved with these rescue operations? How were you contacted, and through whom at the beginning did you get involved?
So when the news broke in the Thai media on the 24th at about 3 p.m. local time, I and some of my very good friends were in an area called Krabi, which is also in the southern part of Thailand, and we were actually cave diving. Obviously not when the news broke. We were sitting in a restaurant and getting some food, and we saw the news, and one of the Thai natives in the group, he knew somebody in the Army, Navy, government, I'm not exactly sure, and he contacted them and offered their help. But back then, this was literally when the news broke, so hours after this was public knowledge, I believe that the situation was not fully understood, how far the kids were in and so on and so forth. So the first feedback we got from that person, which I still don't know who was, that don't worry, we have divers up there, everything's going to be fine. I think they believed that the kids were trapped maybe 100 or maybe 200 meters inside the cave, and from that they just said yes. They had divers that could easily do that mission. We went into the cave, did our cave diving, and came out 3-4 hours later, and at that point the news had accelerated quite a lot.
At that stage, were you given much time to prepare and get there to the north? And did they pay for all your costs? How rushed were you to get there?
No, so what I did after that is I chose to cut my holiday, if you want to call it, my cave diving holiday, short, and go back to where I live and where I have my company. We are not that many cave divers or technical divers in Thailand, and most of us know each other either personally or through businesses and so on and so forth. So very quickly, somebody, one of these technical guide instructors, made one of these messenger groups, and we started to chat and what can we do to assist. And to start with, as we were quite confident that they didn't have the equipment that is required to do cave diving. So to start with, I sent from my company and from other companies in Kutao, and I know they did the same thing in Phuket on the other side of Thailand. We started by setting up equipment to the location, so at least they would have this specialized equipment available. And then I believe it took like 2-3 days, and then they through this messenger group, we got the information that they could actually use our help. So I didn't get an official invite, and then myself and another person, Eric from Qatar, we went up there, and Nico, he was in Malta, he chose to fly back to Thailand immediately. And then we went to Chiang Rai and told the person in charge that this is who we are cave divers, we would like to help if possible. So yes, so we went up there and told the commander, the Thai commander, who was in charge, and said, yes, this is us, and these are our skill set, this is who we are, and we hope we can help.
At that time, from what you've said, it was still an idea that perhaps they're not too far in. The sense of danger wasn't so urgent, am I correct?
Well, I wasn't the first diver on the scene. Other people went up there before me, and I don't think anybody, you know, not even us cave divers, could even imagine that how severe it actually was. That you know, that took a long time before anybody witnessed that. But no, to be honest, I didn't think it. You know, no part before the kids were actually discovered at that location did I think they were 4 kilometers in.
And it seems that the coordination was really spot on, very swift, very organized. From your perspective, is that the case, from an insider's perspective?
I have never, ever participated in any kind of team-building exercise, either real or for training purposes, where everything has worked so well. It was a big shock for me. We had, I don't know, 30, 40 different nationalities. Some of them did not speak English, and I don't speak Thai. So thinking about how complex both that the actual mission in front of us was, and how complex cave diving and working with different nationalities, civilians and military personnel, I'm still a bit surprised that we didn't screw it up more than we did, to be honest. Teamwork was phenomenal, phenomenal teamwork.
And were you accommodated nearby that area?
Yes, we were invited to stay at a local resort about 10 minutes from the cave.
Were there people who took care of everything else, like the food, laundry, all your needs?
This is Thailand, so the hospitality in Thailand is always good. And under these, the week of 10 days we stayed up there, it was absolutely phenomenal. There was never a time where I needed food or drink or anything. We got Thais coming up in the morning. We started early in the morning, and there was nicely, very well-made coffee and croissants and whatever we needed. Some of us had some special requests to food, and the next day that was delivered. So the support from the local Thais and from the persons in charge was as almost expected from Thailand, incredibly hospitality. You know, we got whatever we wanted. So yes, we didn't need any food. Obviously, we couldn't eat the food inside the cave. That's just not feasible. But outside of the cave, we had all the water and Coca-Cola and whatever we wanted to drink, and the same food-wise. You know, we could pick and choose whatever we like. So the backup we had from the locals in Mae Sai, which is the town where the cave is, was out of this world.
That's so fantastic to hear. And for your actual diving and perhaps non-diving duties as well, what did you perform in a day? And if you could explain to us what your duties were as part of the rescue team.
My duties were solely diving. So I was there as a cave diver. We were about, not at the same time, but during the entire mission, I believe we were about 20 cave divers. And our mission was solely to dive, to prepare the further push into the kit and to make it safe to go in and out, both for the kids and for the rescue divers. So everything that didn't have to do with diving, and also the semi-diving related, so filling our tanks and moving our equipment into the cave system, we got all the assistance we could from that boat, from the Royal Thai Navy, the Navy SEALs, the Australian military that was there, and the U.S. military that did the support we got from these three militaries, and we had a Chinese advanced rescue team, and lots of local ties. You know, we literally didn't have to do anything else than diving.
How much time did you spend performing those duties in a day, do you think?
Well, the dives are fairly long dives, so we probably dived for, we were probably in the cave for about 8 to 10 hours every day. First of all, it was a team effort of more than 1,000 people, and no, my personal mission was not to escort the kid out.
Yep.
My mission was to stand at the actual rescue tent when we started to take the kids out. I was positioned in the T-junction where we had our first planned tank change, so that the kids and the divers could not carry enough tanks to safely make it out.
Great.
So they had a pit stop roughly halfway, and that was the mission of my mission, doing the actual rescue mission, taking the divers out. So no, I wasn't assigned to lead the divers. I was a backup leader, so it understood in that way that when the guys, in this case the English guys, came roughly halfway out, I was there, and my primary mission was to change the gas for the diver and for the kit. And backup mission was to replace any faulty equipment, to react to hypothermia if that was the case, or to take over from the diver in the unlikely event that he was not able to continue.
And how many days did you perform those dives? That sounds just so amazing.
Since I believe I landed July 2nd, so I probably did my first dive July, I'm not entirely sure. I think I did not personally participate in the two last days. I was in 36, so I didn't. My last diving day was the first night we got the four kids out. That was my last day. I think 6 or 7 days. I can't remember. But yes, I was there from the first day after discovery. That was my first dive, and I did not participate in the two last days. So however many days that is how many days I was there.
Did you ever feel that what you were doing was not going anywhere, or did you always kind of feel positive? What was going through your mind when you were doing those very, very long dives in such an incredible conditions that we can't even fathom? What was going through your mind when you were doing those dives?
During the actual dive, as little as possible. So when you dive in these conditions, as I said, the conditions we dive in, you know, we had very poor visibility, if any visibility in some areas. In many areas, the visibility was close to zero. And all you have, all the thing you have that tells you that you're doing all right, is that you have a rope in your hand and you're following that rope. And it's best not to think too much about what's going on. Just think about, okay, one more pull on the rope, one more pull on the rope, one more pull on the rope. If you start to think about, you know, what could go wrong and so on, and then you're more likely to get into panic, because I don't think any human being likes to be in these conditions. They are, it is very narrow passageways, it's zero visibility, and the water, while it's not ice cold, it was about 20, 22 degrees, so after a while, you do start to get a little bit cold. So So the best procedure for a rescue attempt, but also in generally if you are in this condition, is not to think too much. You fall back on the training and you just carry on doing the training. And my first dive was completed. I did my first dive after the kids were successfully located. So at that point, when I did my first dive, I knew the kids were alive. And from that point on, I never had any doubt. I was incredibly positive. Both because that was the team spirit. Everybody said, okay, of course we can do this. Maybe we can't do it in 2 days, but we can do it. And also time mentality, I think, is like this, that yes, maybe you are faced with obstacles and so on, but if you carry on, we can do it. So I must admit, I never thought that we wouldn't be able to do it.
So when you found out that the boys were alive, where were you, and could you describe that moment for you?
When I got the news, I had just returned to the resort we stayed on, and we got the news, I think actually we got the news through the news, and not from the guys that were still there. So there was a lot of happiness, and I do believe there was a bottle of whiskey that got open also and to celebrate a little bit. We were incredibly happy because obviously it changed everything. Some of us were afraid that this was not a rescue mission, but a recovery mission. And obviously, if you knew it was a recovery mission, I think the morale in the camp would have changed. You know, it's very, very different bringing out dead people than to bring out people that are alive. So when we knew that they were all alive, and we then, I think, later, maybe an hour or two later, we saw the videos of the kids actually talking. And of course, it made us all feel incredibly positive, and it strengthened the team spirit. Now we knew, okay, the mission is now even more important because we're not going in to recover casualties; we are going in to recover football players. And that felt good.
And did you get to actually interact with them after you go in to interact with the children?
I saw the children doing the first successful rescue, but I have not seen them after that. No, I was one of the last person to come out of the cave from the first rescue attempt, and by that time all the kids were already at the hospital, and I haven't seen them. I've seen them videos. I just saw the press conference in Thai National TV, and they look like they're having a great time.
So at that moment, or perhaps that time when you saw the children, could you explain to us what they were like?
Well, the first time I saw the first kid I saw was the first kid that was successfully brought out, and I was stationed in close to what is known as the T junction. The place that I was about 1.5 meter deep water, so I was not in my dive equipment. I had taken my tank off. I was just in my wetsuit and my harness and my helmet and all the lights and. I see the diver coming up with the kid. He's about, I don't know, 50 meters away, and I can just see this light coming up from the water. It's very hard to see what's going on, and I can see that he's carrying a kid. But I was about 50 meters away, and I could not see if the kid was still breathing or if something. So I asked the person if he needs assistance, and he said, yes, come over and give me a hand. And I walked to him, and I'm possibly, I don't know, 5-3 meters away, and I could see that air is coming up, bubbles are coming out from the kid's full face mask, which indicates that the kid is breathing and therefore also alive. And that was a big release to see, and it made something, you know, because I think we were all, I'm not saying we were pessimistic, but we all knew that, of course, there's a chance that. But not everybody's going to make it, and or risk is a better word. There's a risk that everybody's not going to make it. And when I saw that the first kid was there, and knowing that this guy had just done half of, so I was positioned roughly half the distance out, and he was there, and he was, I'm sure he was scared, but he was breathing. And to be honest, at that point, that was all that really mattered to me.
And I can tell you that in Australia, every single time that a group of kids come out, like the whole country, it's kind of erupted all together in all media channels.
Yes, and I think this is, you know, I wasn't privileged to see that as I was still deep inside the cave when the kids came out. So after the kids came out, you know, the mission was over for the kids. They were brought to safety, but the mission for us divers was not over. We had to clean up and take all the used tanks and fix what was broken and so on and so forth and prepare for the next extraction. So we had a good 2-3 hours more work, but seeing that the first kit was great, second kit was great, third kit was great, fourth kit was great, you start to see a pattern, and obviously we became incredibly positive because, just the first kit was enough, and then the second kit, nothing is wrong with him either. Third kit, he's still good. Fourth is still good. No equipment has broken down. Nobody has panicked. Nobody has done anything they're not supposed to do. And you start to believe it. Okay, maybe we can actually do this with 13 people. So we could.
And apart from the amazing news that came out, we all knew that the ex-Navy SEAL Saman Gunan actually passed away during the operation. From your perspective, what do you think went wrong?
Well, I am not much for guesswork. This is cave diving, and this is cave diving under the most extreme conditions. So the list of things that could go wrong is unfortunately quite extensive. And when I learned about Saman's death, I was outside of the cave. So exactly what happened, I honestly don't know. But the list of potential hazards inside a cave is almost endless. So the only thing I know about that situation is that Saman was successful in delivering oxygen tanks to the kids, and on his way out, something happened. But exactly what, I unfortunately don't have the knowledge, and I believe that nobody really has the knowledge here, because it's very hard to backtrack exactly what happened. But unfortunately, it happened, and it affected, I'm sure, every single diver on the team that we lost one of the rescuers. But I honestly don't know exactly what happened.
And how did that affect you and people around you, your loved ones?
Well, I think it affected me in not a good way. You know, obviously, Saman is an ex-Navy SEAL. He's not just any diver. He's a pretty good diver. And obviously, when you know that somebody of that caliber can get hurt, well, then you obviously start to look at yourself. If such a guy can get hurt, maybe you yourself can get hurt. And so it didn't make me feel more encouraged, but it also, I think also something that happens, and I will give this operation was a military operation. It was led by the Thai Navy SEALs, and I saw how they reacted. I never met someone. I don't know, maybe I did inside the cave. We all look the same. We have a mask and black equipment, and it's hard to identify who's who. But I saw how the other Thai Navy SEALs reacted, and I have no doubt that they were sad about losing a member of their team. But being a military operation, there is only one way forward, and that's just get on with the job, and then later on we can be sad, and we can deal with sorrow later on. Because right now we still have 13 people inside the cave that need to get out. So I think honestly that helped that it was a military operation. There was just no time to sit down and think about that. We had to carry on, and I think that's what we all did.
What about your friends or your family? Did they ever say anything about you being in such a risky situation like that?
Yes, they did. They were not all happy about what I did, of course. You know, they very few non-cave divers fully understand what cave diving is. So what most non-cave divers or non-divers know about cave diving is that it's dangerous, and that is also true. But we have a lot of training, we take a lot of precautions, we have some very strict procedures that we follow to minimize the risk of cave diving. So, but for most uninitiated cave divers, yes, from the outside, it looks like it's an absolute crazy thing to do. And maybe it is, but we do take a lot of precaution. We have a lot of procedures that we follow to minimize the risk. But I'm confident that nobody from my family or friends will entirely happy with what I did.
Australia has our very own Dr. Richard Harris, or Dr. Harry.
You sure do.
In this operation. And he actually mentioned you. He said, the Eurodivers, Eric, Ivan, and our good mates, Klaus and Nico, the pressure that was put on these guys was immense, and they never dropped the ball for a second. Did you feel that the entire world's pressure was upon your shoulders at that time?
No, I think Harry's been very, very nice to us. Yes, of course, but I believe that there was other team members that had much more pressure than us, you know. But I'm entirely happy for what Harry said. You know, it's really nice. But I think he's been very generous in his say that. Of course, there was pressure on us, but nothing compared to other team members.
How would you describe Dr. Harry?
I only met Dr. Harry for a short time, but I think I spoke to him briefly, maybe in total for 10 to 15 minutes, and my first impression is incredibly positive. He is an incredibly nice person and a very, very good doctor. So it's incredibly positive.
And how do you keep in touch with people that are involved?
Well, I knew many of them, so many of us volunteers. I knew the vast majority of the volunteers already. I did not know Dr. Harris or his mate from Australia, which I totally forgot his name right now, and I didn't know the English drivers at all. But most of the other guys I already knew personally. So I keep in touch, like we keep in touch with the mates. I give them a call now and then, I'll go and drink a beer with them. And I hopefully I will be able to keep in touch with the new people I met, so the English divers and the guys from Australia and all the other non-divers that were there who also was instrumental to the success of the mission. The divers obviously got their focus because it was a dive operation, but donors, hunters, they made all the other guys that made us food and got us drinks in the morning, coffee and taxi drivers. And, you know, it was a mission with, I don't know how many people, 1,000 people. And I've made many, many, many new friendships. And I, especially when it comes to the divers, I look forward to diving with these guys under less stressful conditions.
And do you use social media to keep in touch with these guys?
I have a lot of new Facebook friends. Yes, I do.
Now, any thoughts or special experience that perhaps the world hasn't known about that had happened and you'd like to tell us?
Well, I think the story tells the story of teamwork. You know, I think we all know that the big nations or great powers can do whatever they like. I think this story tells that. Even small groups of people, if they have a common goal and have the ability and the training and the knowledge to do something, we can actually make a great difference. We don't need multinational companies or big governments to do this. No, but I think what we need is people that have the skill set to do whatever the situation requires. In this case, it was cave diving. But mainly we need people that are willing to say, yeah, I can take a weekend off or I can do this and I don't need any compensation for it. I'm not doing it to get into the limelight. I'm not doing it to make money. I'm doing it because I have the skills and I believe that this skill set can make a difference. And I think I talk for the entire team, including the non-divers and the militaries, that was the prevailing spirit in the team that, because we all believe that we can actually have a positive effect on a very, very, very negative situation. And I also believe that we proved that to be correct.
Well, one of the last questions now. Does this experience change your life or your perspective on life?
I think I have to admit that, yes, it has changed my life. You know, yes, I used to be a unknown diving instructor on a little unknown island, and I believe that is not the case anymore. I don't think it's changed my life perspective in that way. It's, no, I don't think so. I think in that way, I'm very much the person I was before. But of course, with media attention, interviews like you're doing now, that's not something I've done ever before, and in that way, it's changed my life. Yes, and yeah, I'm very grateful for being able to apply skills that I find almost one day. You know, it's honestly not that big thing. I do this kind of diving almost on a daily basis, but the situation was everything but normal, and it's nice to be able to use your skills in making.
Ivan, many of us here genuinely believe that you're a hero or one of the heroes. How do you see yourself with that label of a hero?
Well, I'm not happy about that. You know, I think we're all heroes. I was fortunate, if you can use this in this context, I was fortunate to be able to use skills that I've built up the last 10 years. And I got to prove that a diver can do a difference. Next time, it's an accountant that will be the difference. So, no, I do not in no way consider myself a hero. But I think that the thing we did as a team could be considered heroic, but not myself. No. I just did what I think everybody else could have done if they had that skill set. I think we can all do a difference, you know, but not everybody can save kids from a cave. But just aware that you have cave experience. But next time it's somebody who falls in front of you on the escalator, and you, at least you can give a hand. You know, you don't need. This was a specific. Yes, if you're not a cave diver, you could not a cave or experienced diver. You could probably not do a difference. But those of us that were, we surely could. It was 9 or 10 days before they were discovered. These kids have been in the cave several times. The coach had been there hundreds of times. He knew exactly how deep he was in the cave. And I know for a fact he knew nobody was coming.
So you think...
And he knew. How could he even... You know, this guy is from the incredibly rural part of Thailand. I'm sure he has barely heard about scuba divers. For sure, never heard about cave divers. So he knew... But he was sitting in there with his 12 football players, and they would die. He knew that. And still, he kept himself sane, he kept the entire team sane, and I think that is the true hero, Brother Egg, as he's known. He knew nobody was coming. Miracles does happen, you know, but I think one of the focus point is, imagine sitting in there for 9 days, complete, it's not dark in there, it's black. It's not like closing your eyes. When you close your eyes, you can still see something. This is without any kind of light. And I believe they had like a bag of toast bread for the 9 days, 13 people. That takes some absolutely superhuman to keep your sanity, to keep the hope, to keep the team spirit. I cannot understand how you did it.
Those were such amazing and humbling stories that you have given us, and I myself perhaps have to reflect upon them as well after speaking to you. Thank you so much, Ivan Karadzic, for speaking to SBS Australia. It's been an honour and a pleasure.
You are more than welcome. You are more than welcome.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.